We're talking about bobbleheads on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Question for you. Have you seen the new Dr. Anthony Fauci bobblehead? You bet. The nation's top infectious disease expert has a nodding figurine, and it's wildly popular. Bobblehead collectors and fans, what are your favorites? Have you ever visited the museum in Milwaukee? What do you enjoy? We're at 800-642-1234. Phil Sklar is co-founder and CEO of the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum. Phil, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, take us on a quick tour, virtual tour, if you will, of the museum and what we can see there with all of these bobbleheads.
Yeah, so we have 6,500 unique bobbleheads from everything, sports, politicians, music, movies, TV, anything and everything you can think of that's been turned into a bobblehead, as well as exhibits related to the history, how they're made, the stories behind so many of them. And a lot more. And people can also do a virtual tour online on our website at bobbleheadhall.com/virtual tour.
What's the story of you and bobbleheads? How did you decide to love them so much?
Yeah, so started out collecting really as a little kid. My dad collected baseball cards growing up and got me into baseball cards. And then about 2003, me and the other co-founder acquired the first bobblehead for the collection, and we just enjoyed them. We thought they were fun, and it was a great, easy way to build the collection by going to sporting events that we were already going to go to and get a free bobblehead. And before we knew it, we had bobbleheads in the kitchen of our condo and thousands of them, and we started to produce a bobblehead, and the rest, I guess, is history.
And so today, you're releasing a series of Bart Starr bobbleheads, is that right?
That's right. So, yes, we wanted to, you know, really honor and celebrate Bart's legacy, and both on and off the field. And we think bobbleheads are the best way to honor someone. And Bart has had several bobbleheads in the past, but they've all been sort of generic bobbleheads of him just, you know, holding the football. And we wanted to do some really special bobbleheads to commemorate his career.
And so with the series, can you give us a sense of each of these figurines in the series of the greatest quarterback for the Green Bay Packers?
Yes, really a legend, you know, not just in Wisconsin, but in NFL, you know, lore. And the first one is career accomplishments, has him with five replica championship rings that he helped bring to Titletown, and has a plaque with his accomplishments on the back, from the Super Bowl titles to MVP awards and so forth. The second one is really special one, commemorating the Ice Bowl. There's never been a bobblehead celebrating the Ice Bowl, probably one of the most famous games in NFL history, and has Star sort of on that quarterback sneak getting into the end zone with the ice on the scoreboard. The third one has him in his MVP car. He received a Corvette for being the MVP of Super Bowl I. And he was also the MVP of Super Bowl II and got a car for that as well. So it's a pretty unique bobblehead there. And then the last one is another really special one. The first one to feature the Packers' three legendary quarterbacks together. So Starr, Favre, and Rodgers all on one base. And a giant bobblehead, really, for fans to be able to commemorate those three legends.
So how do you, I mean, bobbleheads are true to the likeness of the person. How do you do the artistic modeling for these bobbleheads?
Yeah, so it starts out with the rendering, and then from there, they're hand sculpted out of clay and tweaked quite a bit until they look how we want them to look, and then painted. So a lot of work goes into them. We've been working on this series for several months, say close to a year now. So it's exciting to be able to have them here in stock and ready for customers to get.
And so then once you have the likeness just like you want it, then you make, you cast it in a plastic model?
Yeah, it's actually like a poly resin is what it's called. And okay. It's a really high quality granite-like material. So yeah, a lot of people think plastic when they feel them, you know, they're these heavy collectibles, each one's individually numbered. So it's a really nice way to commemorate the, you know, a player, especially someone of Star's stature. And it's something that people do pass down from generation to generation. We see that with some of the early bobbleheads from the 1960s with people who, went to Lambeau Field and bought a bobblehead of, generic Packers player that have given it to their kids and now to their grandkids even.
Oh, so there's certainly that passed down legacy of those bobbleheads in someone's window or on their desk. They have a story to tell.
Exactly, yes. And it's a great way to keep that person's, legacy alive. Kids today didn't watch Brett or Bart Starr growing up. They didn't have that opportunity, but they can get told those stories by their parents or grandparents and now go to YouTube and see some of those clips, but also have that bobblehead, which really sort of brings his play to life.
Phil Sklar is co-founder and CEO of the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum in Milwaukee. Do you collect bobbleheads? Have you been gifted a goofy one? Tell us about it, 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation about bobbleheads just ahead here on the Ideas Network. It is Wisconsin Weekend, and we're exploring the National Bobblehead Museum in Milwaukee. Have you visited? Are bobbleheads a part of your sports, politics, or music memorabilia? What do you think about the new COVID-era bobblehead additions like Dr. Anthony Fauci and White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx? Share on bobbleheads, 800-642-1234. We're at 800-642-1234 on bobbleheads. Phil Sklar co-founded the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum, and he's our guide. So, Phil, tell us about these Dr. Fauci bobbleheads. What's going on?
Yeah, so mid-March we started to see Dr. Fauci socks and T-shirts, and we, every day watching the news, like most people, saw this Dr. Fauci come into our living rooms, and so we thought, hey, what better way to honor him than with the bobblehead. So on April 1st, we released a bobblehead of Dr. Fauci with $5 from everyone sold going to the Protect the Heroes Fund to raise money for PPE for frontline workers. And within a week, it became our best-selling bobblehead of all time. To
Wait, the
date,
best-selling bobblehead of all time?
yes, our best-selling bobblehead of all time. We individually numbered them to 42,020 and sold out. About a few weeks ago, and are on to a new version, and have to date raised close to now $300,000 through Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, and eight governors for the Protect the Heroes Fund.
Oh, and so this fund is where does the funds go to?
Yeah, so it started with the 100 million mask challenge, and it's administered by the American Hospital Association. So it's going to directly to hospitals and clinics that need PPE, which is still a critical need. It's not talked about as much as it was during the, early days of the pandemic, but it's a critical need, and we were excited to do something on our end with bobbleheads to help during this unprecedented time.
Did you ever imagine that there would be bobbleheads of physicians of the nation's public health expert, infectious disease expert?
No, I mean, definitely was not thinking that when, on New Year's Eve or, earlier this year, and you never really know who might make for a good bobblehead, and it has been amazing to see people's response, and we've seen them all over social media, and people having them in the background from politicians all over, just really blown away by the response for it, and also the ability to use it to for a great cause.
And I understand you're really responsive to the public's requests. Bunny emailed to say that as a fan of PBS and bobbleheads, Bunny is wondering if the museum has any bobbleheads of the cast of the Red Green Show. Bunny says they love the museum and their coworker was fascinated with the collection. And so this the Red Green Show was a Canadian television comedy that aired on various channels in Canada. Is there anything like that at the museum?
We have so many bobbleheads in the museum that sometimes it's hard to. We have a database, and we're getting new bobbleheads in all the time. But there is a bobblehead, a red green bobblehead, and I know we do have one. I'm trying to picture in my head where it is in the museum, but yes, there is a red green bobblehead, and I know we have it.
Well, your brain should be this like vast repository of bobbleheads at this point, Phil. You know, what about these eight governor bobbleheads? Who are these governors?
Yeah, so we got requests shortly after releasing the Dr. Fauci bobblehead to do bobbleheads of some of the governors that were also in the news. So Andrew Cuomo was the first primary governor that was requested, and we did him. Governor DeWine from Ohio, and also Governor Evers here from Wisconsin was one that we kept getting requests for. So we said, hey, let's do it, and people have enjoyed getting their governors as well.
All right, Evers in the mix. So in the few seconds we have left, how is your museum preparing to safely reopen?
Yeah, so it's definitely big steps that we're taking to make sure everybody is safe when we do reopen here, hopefully later this month. And, you know, we're just taking all those precautions that CDC and all the different organizations are sort of mandating or suggesting to make sure that, you know, we're doing stuff, something that Dr. Fauci would approve of when we do reopen.
Well, Phil, thank you for joining us. Happy bobblehead creation.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Have a great week.
You weekend. You too. Phil Sklar, co-founder and CEO of the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum in Milwaukee. Coming up, we talk with the head of the organization, Imagine Milwaukee, and the work to develop arts and culture and help artists thrive and do their work in our state's largest city. That conversation is ahead on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We are in conversation with the arts advocacy organization Imagine Milwaukee here on Wisconsin Weekend. According to the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies, Wisconsin is rock bottom, spending less per capita on arts funding than any other state in our country. And our neighbor Minnesota is number one. But there is momentum to turn that around. Is there public art in your neighborhood? What effect does it have on your quality of life? Artists and creators, how are you doing now? We're at 800-642-1234 to join this conversation. 800-642-1234. David Lee is CEO of Imagine Milwaukee. It's a nonprofit working to amplify arts and culture in the city. David, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
So good to be with you today. How are you?
I'm doing well. I want to dive right into the projects that you're working on. One of them is called Road of Democracy. What is this project trying to share and explore?
God, it is such a fun and amazing project that brings together the poetry of Milwaukee Poet Laureate Dasha Kelly Hamilton with the artwork of Della Wells, and it is exploring this idea of the formation of our democracy, the work that has gone into it, and the work that is still yet to come. And it pairs these beautiful words in this poem called Of, with, again, Della Wells' collage work of historical Black women. And it is just a beautiful sort of pairing. It's a beautiful showing of how you can bring two different forms of art together to really explicate this unique moment we're living in as we continue to build this road of democracy.
And where are these pieces? Where can we see them?
Yeah, so in Milwaukee, they are on a 1.5 mile stretch on Water Street right outside of City Hall in the road leading up to City Hall. So you can think of the road, right, sort of road mm-hmm. to City Hall as the road of democracy, or just the road that we all travel on together, that the main thoroughfare in Milwaukee. Folks who are not living in Milwaukee, they can go to roadofdemocracy.com and see the poem and a lot of the banners that have been put up. And we were just incredibly proud to be able to partner with the Downtown Bid and the Milwaukee Arts Board on this project.
There's this effort through Road of Democracy to create a collective voice through this project. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, you know, we are actually also going to be putting on a series of events between the end of September and November to continue to explicate and to explore this idea of what this road to democracy means. And I think when we talk about this collective voice, it is really this collective voice between artists, civic leaders, and everyday citizens about what this road, again, that we're all traveling on, how is it holding us? How is it taking care of us? And how are we taking care of it? Because it is, this road is something that we're all sharing together, right? It is the thing that sort of helps us understand and helps us govern and helps us lead. This is the shared space that we all are in together.
David, I've been thinking about you this summer as I pass by the boarded up buildings of sure. different merchants, and so much public art going up on the streets to signify the Black Lives Matter movement. How have artists and creators seized this moment?
You know, I think, I've been asked a lot, right? Like, why is art so important? And I think if there is not a time such as this summer when our nation has been dealing with these dual pandemics of COVID-19 and institutional racism, where you see how important art is, right? Because from all of this uncertainty, from all of this, from the rubble of the uprisings, the first thing people did was they picked up their chalk, they picked up their paintbrushes, and they went to work. They started creating, they started drawing. And, it was incredible to see not only all the murals that have come up, but also simple things like chalk drawings. In my neighborhood, every time I walk my dog, I see these incredible chalk drawings. I see these incredible pictures that kids have drawn that are in windows in my neighborhood. And it really gives art, it really gives people a way to make sense of the senseless. It gives voice to the voiceless. And I think it immediately, particularly on some of these larger public art pieces, murals that have gone up, it really puts our city and our region and state in the middle of this important national conversation about, again, not only democracy, not only about creating a more inclusive republic, but how do we create a more inclusive and equitable state?
If you're just joining us, we're talking with David Lee, who is CEO of Imagine Milwaukee, and we're discussing public art and how to support artists this year, theaters, galleries, studios. We want to hear from you. What has your experience been through the pandemic? Where do you see public art in your own community, and what does it make you think? Join in to the conversation, 800-642-1234. David, how do you see us approaching public art in a different way amid the pandemic, amid the protests, amid this world that seems so fractured right now?
Yeah, what a great question. You know, I think our view on this is that the more public art, the more art that goes into the world, the better. And I think this sort of leads back into your open about how there is a paucity, a relative paucity of public art funding in our city and also in our state. You mentioned Wisconsin's 50th in the nation, investing about 13 cents per capita. And this is an industry, I would say the art industry, the arts and culture sector in our state employs nearly 100,000 people. And in Milwaukee, the spend of our arts and culture organizations is somewhere on the quarter of a billion dollars. That's $225 million. So these are real dollars that employ real people to keep our friends and neighbors at work. And I think that's a real important distinction about this is not, we're not sort of just putting money into the creation of beautiful art pieces, although that is the effect, right? We're actually investing in people doing the work that continues to inspire us, help us heal, and help us make sense of the world.
How has the pandemic affected the artists that you work with through Imagine Milwaukee?
I mean, it's been tough. The pandemic, the public health response to the pandemic really put our city's artists and creatives out of their ability to earn, right? Whether you were acting on a stage at the Milwaukee Rep, or if you were working at a restaurant or teaching an art class or teaching a dance class. I mean, the the inability for our city's artists to actually earn has been just incredibly difficult. And this is why I think, again, going back to this public support for the arts, I mean, when you support the arts, when you support the arts and culture sector, you're not just simply, you're supporting the ability for people to be able to continue their practice and continue earning. And I think that is such an important thing to remember.
It's really difficult to, I would imagine, for performing arts companies to know when they can get back on the stage, when they can start that next production. And this goes, you know, from everything to big companies, to small companies, to community theaters as well.
That's right. You know, performing arts groups are the first to close and last to open. And even when they're able to open, whether or not folks feel the general public have the confidence, right, in the public health response, I think it also is related to their ability to go back. And I think that's the key, right, is that like our artists and creatives and arts organizations are incredibly adaptive. They're incredibly flexible, right, to be able to do a lot of different things. But if there's no audience, if there's no ability for them to actually perform and sell their product, it's just really difficult. And I think, you know, being able to think about our city's artists and states, artists, creatives, and arts organizations as the businesses that they are, I think is really, really important.
So looking inward to Imagine Milwaukee, how are you doing, you know, trying to be this catalyst, this synergy in arts and in arts funding?
Never waste a good pandemic, right? I mean, I think we have been we've been able to leverage, I think, these challenges to be able to tell a new story about why our city's arts organizations are so vital to our region's vibrancy. Again, I think I mentioned it. Our city's arts and culture organizations generate $250 million worth of spend. That is a real impact on our city and region. And to be able to talk about our city's artists and creatives, not as some magical unicorn, but actually our friends and neighbors that take care of our seniors, teach our kids, and are also, by the way, the small business entrepreneurs that are so tolerant for risk to do the thing that they do. But these are the folks that are really going to be able to build our city's future and build the future of our state. So it has just been incredibly inspiring and incredibly exciting to be doing this work at this time.
We only have a few seconds left, but where do you find hope right now?
I find hope seeing the incredible creative power of our city, region, and state's creative artists. Like I said, with artists at the helm, creating works that help us make sense of the world, with artists at the helm or being a part of leadership tables throughout our state, our state and region has a bright, bright future.
David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be here with you.
David Lee is CEO of Imagine Milwaukee. It's a nonprofit organization aiming to amplify arts and culture in the city.